This is VOA News reporting by remote. I'm Michael Brown. U.S. President Joe Biden and Israel's prime minister agree on their goal with Iran, but differ on how to make it happen. AP Washington correspondent Sagar Magane reports.
In Jerusalem,
we will not allow Iran to acquire a nuclear weapon.
We cannot allow Iran to become nuclear.
But the president and Yair Lapid split from there. The U.S. is waiting for Iran to respond about a path toward rejoining a deal aimed at keeping it from building a nuclear weapon.
When that will come, I'm not certain.
The president says he won't wait forever. Meantime, Lapid says diplomacy is not the path.
Words will not stop them, Mr. President.
And Iran must instead face a real threat of force if it does not back down. Tehran is warning both nations of a harsh response if they take action. Sagar Magani, Washington.
Ukrainian officials said Russian missiles struck the central Ukrainian city of Vinnytsia on Thursday, killing at least 23 people and wounding more than 100 others. The governor of Vinnytsia said Ukrainian air defense systems shot down another four missiles over the area. With a population of 370,000, Vinnytsia is one of Ukraine's largest cities. Thousands of people from eastern Ukraine, where Russia has concentrated its offensive, have fled there since the start of the war in late February. Warfare continues to rage in eastern Ukraine, but the British Defense Ministry said Thursday that despite continued shelling, Russian forces have not made major territorial gains in recent days. As always, for details on more news, we invite you to join us at our website. That is voanews.com. Also on the VOA mobile app. Via remote, this is VOA News. Sri Lanka's president, Gotabaya Rajapaksa, has resigned. He announced the move from Singapore, having fled angry protests at home, triggered by a deep economic crisis. A formal announcement is expected Friday. Rajapaksa had earlier pledged to leave office by Wednesday in the Sri Lankan capital of Colombo. Protesters occupying the official residences of the president and prime minister vacated the buildings. A curfew has been imposed in the city and the troops are patrolling the streets, but reports say the city remains calm. Protesters are also demanding the resignation of Ranil Wickremesinghe, the prime minister whom Rajapaksa had appointed acting president. Pro basketball player Brittany Griner was back in a Russian court Thursday, a week after she pleaded guilty to drug charges. Lawyers for Griner said the head of the Russian basketball club for which she plays vouched for her good character. Griner has been playing in Russia during the WNBA offseason since 2014. She is also a two-time Olympic gold medalist. Griner was detained at a Moscow airport back in February. Police said they found cannabis oil in her luggage. Griner said she didn't mean to bring the oil with her. Griner could face 10 years in prison. The state of Texas has gone to court to block the Biden administration's emergency abortion guidance. We get more on that story from Norman Hall.
The lawsuit filed by Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton seeks to block Biden administration rules requiring that hospitals must provide abortions if the procedure is necessary to save a mother's life, even in cases where state law mostly bans the procedure. The legal wrangling is causing concern for doctors and hospitals. One Dallas obstetrician says emergency departments may face these situations frequently when patients experience miscarriages or ectopic pregnancies, or when a woman's water breaks before a fetus is viable. White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre called the litigation extreme and radical. Norman Hall, Washington.
Ivana Trump, the first wife of former President Donald Trump, and mother of his oldest children, has died in New York City. She was 73. People familiar with the matter tell the Associated Press that police are investigating whether she fell accidentally down the stairs at her home. And recapping a headline, this newscast, Sri Lanka's president, Gotabaya Rajapaksa, has resigned. A formal announcement expected Friday. As always, for more news, we invite you to join us at our website, voanews.com, or the VOA mobile app. By a remote, I'm Michael Brown, VOA News.
Today is Friday, July 15th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Ofor in Washington. Coming up in the next half hour, Kyiv accuses Russia of shelling central Ukraine, killing over a dozen people and injuring 90.
The three rockets hit offices and damaged residential buildings in Vinnytsia, southwest of the capital Kiev, also igniting a fire that expanded to engulf 50 cars.
The U.S. joins 45 countries to probe alleged war crimes by Russian forces in Ukraine.
Dutch Foreign Minister Wopke Hoekstra said justice must be delivered against alleged Russian atrocities in Ukraine, possibly by setting up a special tribunal to judge them.
And the World Health Organization calls for action to stem growing deadly infections in Africa. We'll have these stories and more next on International Edition. Stay tuned. Ukrainian officials say Russian missiles that struck a central city in central Ukraine killed at least 23 people and wounded more than 100 others, including children, while dozens were missing. Officials say cruise missiles fired from a Russian submarine in the Black Sea struck a medical center, stores and residential buildings in Vinnytsia, a city southwest of Kyiv, the capital. Associated Press correspondent Charles de la Desma reports.
The three rockets hit offices and damaged residential buildings in Vinnytsia, southwest of the capital Kiev, also igniting a fire that expanded to engulf 50 cars in an adjacent parking lot. Footage from the State Emergency Service of Ukraine shows injured people helped by rescuers and ambulances extinguishing flames. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky, who called the attack an open act of terrorism against civilians in locations without military value, said a child is among the dead. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
Russia's foreign ministry on Thursday attacked the United States and Britain for helping to train Ukrainian armed forces, calling it part of a, quote, hybrid warfare, unquote, being waged by NATO countries against Russia. In a media briefing, foreign ministry spokesperson Maria Zakharova said Wednesday that Washington had provided Ukraine with instructions who were helping Kyiv forces use advanced U.S.-made high-mobility artillery rocket systems, HIMARS. She noted the rockets, which have a longer range and are more precise than other artillery weapons, were being used, quote, widely, unquote, by Ukrainian forces. Military analysts believe the new weapons could be a game-changer, and Kyiv says it has already used the rockets to destroy multiple Russian ammunition depots in eastern Ukraine. The United States has joined some 45 countries in agreeing to coordinate investigations into alleged war crimes committed by Russian forces in Ukraine, with the Netherlands raising the possibility of creating a special tribunal to judge them. For VOA from Paris, Lisa Bryant has more on an international meeting in The Hague, which came amid reports of another deadly Russian missile attack in Ukraine.
Dutch Foreign Minister Wopke Hoekstra said justice must be delivered against alleged Russian atrocities in Ukraine, possibly by setting up a special tribunal to judge them.
The way I understand it, we have to fill the vacuum, and the ICC here doesn't have the jurisdiction. So I can imagine that you know, we do look into coming up with such a tribunal. As the Netherlands, we will take an open look into this. It will probably not be easy. There is merit in doing that with as many friends as possible from the international community.
Ukraine has already called for such a tribunal, similar to those set up to judge atrocities committed during the Rwandan genocide or the former Yugoslavia. President Volodymyr Zelensky reiterated that demand by video link during Thursday's so-called Ukraine accountability meeting in the Netherlands. Countries attending pledged $20 million to support the UN's International Criminal Court, or ICC, and other experts probing alleged atrocities linked to the Russian-launched conflict in Ukraine. Russia has denied targeting civilians in Ukraine. The ICC doesn't have the jurisdiction to prosecute suspected perpetrators because neither Ukraine nor Russia are court members. But ICC prosecutor Karim Khan said the tribunal did have powerful tools to help deliver justice and that coordination among countries was key.
This has to go beyond Ukraine because every life matters. No people of the world are more precious than other people of the world.
Speaking on behalf of U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken, U.S. Human Rights Envoy Yusra Zayat said alleged Russian atrocities in Ukraine mirrored those it's committed elsewhere. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
Turkish officials say there's a potential breakthrough in efforts to release Ukrainian grain to world markets as global food prices soar amid Russia's war with Ukraine. Turkey's Defense Minister Hulusi Akar says an agreement is likely to be announced soon following four-way talks Wednesday among Russian, Ukrainian, United Nations and Turkish officials in Istanbul. For VOA, Dorian Jones reports.
Turkish Defense Minister Hulusi Akar said in a statement after Wednesday's talks that a deal to allow the release of millions of tons of Ukrainian grain could come as early as next week. Akar said Turkey would play a pivotal role in checking shipments in harbours and guaranteeing the safety of Black Sea export routes. In addition, a coordination centre with Ukraine, Russia and the United Nations for exporting grain would be set up in Turkey, he said. UN Secretary-General Antonio Guterres, while welcoming the process, also cautioned Wednesday that it is not yet a done deal.
More technical work will now be needed to materialise today's progress, but the momentum is clear.
Trust has been a key stumbling block in months of diplomatic efforts to reach a deal. Kyiv has said it fears that if it demines its ports to allow cargo ships to export grain, Russian forces will use that move to their advantage and attack. The grain has been stuck amid Russia's invasion of Ukraine. Aaron Stein of the Philadelphia-based Foreign Policy Research Institute says trust and international sanctions on Russia have been the main obstacles.
This food corridor would require the Ukrainians to remove mines from seaports. They were put there for a reason, to keep Russians from invading their country. And there is no appetite whatsoever to lift sanctions, because that is the Russian demand. And that's just not going to happen.
The Reuters news agency quotes a UN official speaking anonymously as saying that most of the sticking points have been overcome, without giving details. Moscow has so far not commented on the Istanbul talks. Meanwhile, the UN warns that unless tens of millions of tons of grain stuck in Ukrainian ports are released, world food prices will continue to climb, threatening famine across the globe. Ukraine is a leading wheat exporter, and nations in Africa are heavily dependent on Ukrainian grain. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky said Ukraine is determined to reach a deal. Zelensky said his government is putting significant effort into resuming the supply of food to the world market. He said he is grateful to the United Nations and Turkey for their efforts. The progress at the Istanbul talks has underlined Turkey's position as a critical facilitator in negotiations between the warring parties, says Sinan Ülgen of the Center for Economics and Foreign Policy Studies, a research organization in Istanbul.
President Erdogan has been careful to highlight that Turkey wants to maintain relations with both sides. So as a result of this, you know, balanced policy, Turkey is also trying to carve out a space for diplomatic influence as a facilitator or potentially as a mediator.
President Recep Tayyip Erdogan has close ties with his Ukrainian and Russian counterparts. Ahead of the Istanbul talks, the Turkish leader spoke with Zelensky. Next week, the Turkish leader is scheduled to meet face-to-face with President Vladimir Putin in Tehran for talks that could be key to finalising any deal to get Ukrainian grain back on world markets. Dorian Jones, VOA News, Istanbul.
President Joe Biden visited Israel, the first leg of his trip to the Middle East since taking office. His administration is encouraging Israel to integrate defense capabilities with Arab neighbors to counter a resurgent Iran. White House Bureau Chief Patsy Widas-Kuwara has this story from Jerusalem, with reporting by Anita Powell.
President Joe Biden launched his first Middle East visit Wednesday in Tel Aviv with strong assurances to Israel.
We have reaffirmed the unshakable commitment of the United States to Israel's security, including partnering with Israel on the most cutting-edge defense systems in the world.
Biden was given a tour of those missile defense systems, including the Iron Dome and the Iron Beam, to which the U.S. contributes billions of dollars. Washington is encouraging Israel to integrate its defense capabilities with its Arab neighbors, sending a message to Iran. Eitan Gilboa, expert on American-Israel relations at Bar-Ilan University.
You have one last chance to go back to the 2015 nuclear deal, or else the United States will support and sponsor a regional defense system that is designed primarily against you.
In an interview with Israeli TV, Biden said he would use force against Iran as a last resort. While Biden is in the region, Israel is eager to pursue deeper engagements with the Arab world. Israeli Prime Minister Yair Lapid.
We will discuss building a new security and economy architecture with the nations of the Middle East following the Abraham Accords and the achievements of the Negev Summit. And we will discuss the need to renew a strong global coalition that will stop the Iranian nuclear program.
The Abraham Accords is the Trump-era deal that normalized diplomatic relations between Israel and Arab countries. While Arab nations deepen engagement with Israel, clashes continue in the West Bank and Gaza Strip, Palestinian territories occupied by Israel since 1967. Zaha Hassan, a fellow at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace, who spoke to VOA via Zoom from Ramallah.
The Palestinian issue has largely dropped off the map of the Abraham Accords, and the focus is really on developing regional economic ties between Israel and its Arab neighbors at the expense of Palestinian sovereignty.
While acknowledging it's unlikely to happen soon, Biden, who will meet Palestinian leaders on Friday, reiterated his support for the two-state solution.
That remains, in my view, the best way to ensure the future of equal measure of freedom, prosperity, and democracy for Israelis and Palestinians alike.
Biden ended his first day with a visit to Israel's Holocaust Memorial, where he paid respect to the millions of Jews killed in World War II and met with American Holocaust survivors. Patsy Wirakuswara, VOA News, Jerusalem.
In other news, Italy's president has rebuffed Prime Minister Mario Draghi's offer to resign after a key ally refused to back the government in a Senate vote. The presidential office said Thursday evening that President Sergio Mattarella didn't accept the resignation and invited the premier to go to parliament to test support for his national unity government. Draghi was snubbed earlier in the day by his populist five-star movement allies. He had told his cabinet he was resigning because the majority that had backed his government since its creation last year no longer exists. If the political crisis is not resolved, Italy's president could dissolve parliament, triggering an early election as soon as late September. For more on this story and other breaking news, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Remember to connect with us on social media. We are on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Search for VOA Africa. You are listening to VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Ofo in Washington. Mali's military government has suspended the rotation of UN military and police forces following the renewal last month of the mandate of the UN mission there. Annie Reisenberg reports from Bamako.
The government announced in a written statement that for national security reasons, all rotations of the military contingent and police contingent of MINUSMA were suspended as of Thursday. The suspension comes after Mali arrested 49 soldiers from Ivory Coast on Sunday. During a Tuesday briefing, Farhan Haq, deputy spokesman for the UN Secretary General, said that the troops were not officially part of MINUSMA, but came as support of their contingents, what he describes as a common practice in peacekeeping missions. The Malian government labeled them mercenaries. Ivory Coast has called for their release. The arrests were not mentioned in the statement announcing the suspension. Since April, the UN has been seeking access to the town of Mora, where locals told human rights investigators and journalists that the army and Russian mercenaries carried out a massacre over 5 days. The mandate for the mission in Mali was renewed during a Security Council meeting on June 29th. During renewal talks, Mali's UN representative said the government would not allow the UN to carry out investigations of alleged human rights abuses as part of its mandate. The UN mission in Mali has almost 12,000 troops and 1,700 police officers. It is a visible presence in many of Mali's northern cities, which were taken over by Islamist militants in 2012 and have seen increasing insecurity in recent months following the French army's withdrawal from the country. Annie Reisenberg for VOA News, Bamako, Mali.
Thank you, Annie. And the World Health Organization is calling for action to stem the growing spread of deadly infections such as monkeypox and Ebola between animals and humans in Africa. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
A new WHO analysis finds zoonotic outbreaks on the African continent have increased by 63% from 2012 to 2022, compared to the previous decade. Globally, the WHO says more than 60% of human infectious diseases and more than 75% emerging infectious diseases are caused by pathogens found in wild or domestic animals. It says those diseases sicken about 1 billion people and kill millions every year. WHO's Regional Director for Africa, Matshidiso Moeti, says zoonotic diseases pose a severe threat in Africa. In the past decade, she says outbreaks of the animal-transmitted illnesses accounted for 1 in 3 confirmed public health events in the region.
A deeper dive reveals that Ebola and similar hemorrhagic fevers constitute nearly 70% of these outbreaks. The remainder include, among others, monkeypox, dengue fever, anthrax, and plague. Although there's been a notable increase in monkeypox cases since April this year compared to the same period in 2021, the positive news is the numbers are still lower than for the 2020 outbreak peak.
So far this year, the health agency has reported more than 2,000 suspected cases of monkeypox. Of those, only 203 have been confirmed. Most cases and deaths are among males with an average age of 17. Moeti notes infections originating in animals have been jumping to humans for centuries, but the risk of mass infections and deaths has been relatively limited in Africa.
As rising urbanization encroaches on the natural habitats of the continent's wildlife and the demand for food from an especially fast-growing population burgeons, the risk is heightened. The addition of improved road, rail, and air links, which remove the natural barrier that poor transportation infrastructure provided, opens the way for the spread of zoonotic disease outbreaks from remote to urban areas.
Moeti says Africa cannot be allowed to become a hotspot for emerging infectious diseases. She says a so-called all-hands-on-deck approach is needed to counter the threat. She says experts in human, animal, and environmental health must work together with communities to prevent and control zoonotic outbreaks from spreading across the continent. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
This is Science in a Minute.
A new paper in the journal Nature details the discovery of a pattern of strange and tenacious bursts of radio energy that last for about 3 seconds and then repeat every 0.2 seconds. The study authors identified these unusual signals as fast radio bursts, which normally only last for a couple of milliseconds. The pattern of these radio bursts is described as being similar to a beating heart, and the source of these signals could be a type of neutron star such as a radio pulsar or magnetar in a galaxy billions of light years away. Published in the journal Nature, the study was written by researchers at the CHIME FRB Collaboration, McGill University in Canada, the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, and other institutions throughout the world. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Border Crossings.
Join host Larry London.
Larry London.
On Border Crossings, VOA's only worldwide music request hour.
Whoa.
Every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in for the biggest hits and amazing artists. Win prizes and get the latest news from exclusive celebrity interviews.
Ooh.
Send your requests to Facebook at VOA Larry London, Twitter at Border Crossings, or Instagram at Border Crossings VOA, or call 202-619-2077 and have your favorite music played to the entire world. Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal, only on The Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel. U.S. President Joe Biden makes his first visit to the Middle East as American head of state. There will be less emphasis on resolving the Israeli-Palestinian conflict and more focus on countering Iran, shoring up oil reserves, and strengthening ties between Israel and its new Arab allies. Brian Katulis and David Schenker analyze the outcome and impact of Joe Biden's trip to Israel, the West Bank, and Saudi Arabia. That's Encounter this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
And to all our VOA listeners, please note we have moved our programs to a new website, voaafrica.com. From voanews.com, there you will find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. Find us on voaafrica.com, and thanks for listening. This has been VOA's International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, thank you so much for listening. Visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours a day at voaafrica.com. Until next time, I am Chinedu Afo in Washington, wishing you a great weekend.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
In 2022, the DPRK has launched 31 ballistic missiles, including 6 intercontinental ballistic missiles, an intermediate-range ballistic missile, and at least 2 claimed hypersonic glide vehicles. All these launches violated multiple UN Security Council resolutions. In addition, reports indicate that Pyongyang is preparing to conduct a nuclear test for the first time in 5 years. In the face of these provocations, the United States introduced a resolution at the Security Council in May, strengthening sanctions on the DPRK over its ballistic missile launches. However, for the first time in 15 years, a dangerous division occurred in the Security Council regarding the DPRK. While 13 members voted in favor of the resolution, Russia and the People's Republic of China, 2 permanent members of the Council, voted to veto it, ensuring its defeat. On June 8th, at a discussion of the UN General Assembly over the vetoes cast by Russia and the PRC, Ambassador Jeffrey De Laurentiis, Senior Advisor for Political Affairs at the U.S. Mission to the United Nations, said the vetoes showed implicit approval of the DPRK's dangerous and destabilizing actions. 13 council members chose to send a strong message to the DPRK that its unlawful WMD and ballistic missile development will not be tolerated, and to send a signal to all proliferators that there should be consequences for their behavior. 2 did not. Ambassador De Laurentiis noted that earlier this year, Russia and the PRC pledged a no-limits partnership. We hope these vetoes are not a reflection of a partnership elevated above the collective interest of this body or of the multilateral institutions mandated to ensure the safety and security of us all, he said. The United States has repeatedly made clear that it seeks dialogue with Pyongyang without preconditions, and the commitment to a diplomatic path with the DPRK remains. The United States has also made clear that, together with its allies, it will maintain a strong deterrent capacity and will seek implementation of all multilateral and unilateral sanctions. At the UN, Ambassador De Laurentiis declared the United States will continue to work regularly, diligently, and transparently with the Security Council, our allies and partners, and all member states who seek to stop the DPRK's unlawful WMD and ballistic missile programs and uphold the values of non-proliferation.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.